conducting an investigation into the questionable death of a Mr. Herman Titus.
He said he had a headache. His fingertips was numb and he went to medical.
He was brought over to the clinic where I was working. He said he was in a car accident.
He just complained, said he was sore.
Neck, back, and tailbone soreness. He was upset when he was brought in because he had to wait. He wanted to be seen immediately. He started yelling toward the nurses, "You need to see me right now. Why the fuck should I wait?" He signed a medical refusal and the officers took him back to his building.
There was a medical emergency called in building 12. The inmate was having a seizure. CPR was in progress.
Okay.
Which count?
98, 99,
100. Pulse check. Oh,
do you believe or do you know if any of the guards took their time or neglected him?
As far as I'm concerned, they didn't do their job.
Why would you say that?
He came back from medical, it wasn't a half hour later, and he was dead, so apparently something was wrong.
This is Catalyst, an investigative podcast from KXAN News and Nexstar Media Group. I'm Josh Hinkle. This season...
Any death in custody is a tragic event, both for the family members, obviously the decedent, and all the staff that have to deal with that.
We take a closer look at a Texas jail inmate's sudden death, the signs his family believes were missed, and the evidence kept secret until our team started asking questions.
Now in this period of constant, ongoing information flow, 24-hour news cycles, the public expects to be informed of every detail of everything that's going on.
Transparency, more information, and timely reporting. The events of this year have really highlighted the need to address this issue. We need to do something about criminal justice reform.
Other hand! Give me your hand! Flap your stomach! Flap your stomach! I can't breathe!
As protests over police brutality play out across the country, we examine the laws in Texas when someone dies in custody, what information agencies have to release, what they don't, and why stories like this are sparking change at the state capitol.
What a sheriff needs to really ask themselves is, what happened wrong? And if it is wrong, what can I do to fix it?
I stood on the wooden porch of Demisha Burns' trailer house to get out of the rain. I'd only ever spoken with Demisha on the phone. Today, our first meeting, she was running late, picking up her two daughters after clocking out at the hotel in Austin where she cleaned rooms. She'd moved her family here to Bastrop not long before. It was a smaller community just east of the city, more affordable, and a fresh start. Demisha finally pulled up.
Okay.
Hurried her girls inside and off to their room. She apologized and explained.
I've been a single mom since I was 14 years old. I had my oldest at 14, and I didn't have nobody there. I didn't have my mom around, my dad. I didn't have nobody. This is natural for me, taking care of kids and working and trying to provide for them. I mean, it's been a struggle, but for the most part, it's life. You know, you do what you got to do to take care of your responsibilities.
As I sat in her living room, I looked up at the wall full of photos. Demisha, the girls, and another face at different stages of life. A baby, a boy, then a man.
I grew up with my son, and me and my son was more like best friends. Through my life, he was my everything. I mean, no matter what I went through in life, from relationships to work. I mean, he was helpful. He talked a lot. It's like I always had him to sit down and have a conversation with him. Like, even when I'm trying to figure out how I'm gonna pay the light bill or I'm behind on the rent and I'm like, well, this check is coming. Like, he was pretty much like the man in my life. No matter how much we went through, he was just always there. and, you know, always making me feel better and motivating me to work harder. And, Mom, you got this. He would sit there and he would give me advice like he's lived. He was very wise amongst his years. I miss those conversations.
Herman Titus stood next to his mom in the portrait, hanging in the middle of all the other photos. A little skinnier and younger looking than the more recent picture I'd seen, a mugshot. Demetia stood and took the frame off the wall. She thought he was 17 in this one, around the time he dropped out of school.
I mean, the teachers, they said, like, he could have really, like, graduated early if he would just show up at school, you know, because he got so bored with school that sometimes he just wouldn't go, you know. He would miss school sometimes and drive me crazy for a week or so, and then I'm getting on him about truancy and missing classes, and then I get a call from the teacher saying he aced the test and was never there.
Listen, bro. Look.
She said Herman started hanging out with a different, rougher crowd.
We're in the third right now, just walking the block, you know what I'm saying? It's late night. I'm getting this for free, man. We recreating.
His posts on Facebook back then showed him mostly out late at night in Austin with a bunch of other guys.
Check this out.
I just wanted him to be more responsible about his choices and decisions. And being a single woman, raising a young man with no father figure, it was like I wanted him to know these are consequences that comes from it.
I know that he had gotten in some trouble with the law later on in his life.
He got caught up in a situation with some new friends. A lady house got burglarized in our apartment complex. He did go and help the boys get rid of the stuff. So it was his identification that had pawned the goods, which got him, you know, convicted of that crime. And that's what he went to jail for. He had some other, like, minor marijuana cases and stuff like that that had turned into warrants and stuff. But they handled all of that at one time. And when he got out, they put him on 8 years probation. He was doing pretty good. You know, he was trying to get set back up with school when he got home. We was in our own place, so he was able to be paroled home.
That was 2017, a year before I met Demetia. We were sitting on the same couch where Herman slept when he got out of jail, but that didn't last long. By then, he was 21. The house was crowded, and Demetia said he started staying there less and less.
He came home for Mother's Day, spent Mother's Day with me. After that, that was pretty much the last time I seen him.
Austin 911, do you need police, fire, or EMS?
Just a few nights later, Herman was driving on the outskirts of Austin in a construction zone after leaving a party.
What's the address of the emergency?
He was high and said he fell asleep behind the wheel.
183, sir, in 51st. A car had went off the road down into the pavement, down into the creek.
And I guess the car veered out of control or whatever, and they end up going off the bridge right there at 51st. And wrecked.
Stay on the line for me. About how far down did it go?
I can't really see, sir. You know what I'm saying? Due to the fact that it's dark out here, but they're down off in there, sir.
According to the crash report, it seemed like it was a pretty bad crash.
It was 30 feet down.
Exactly.
The Austin Police crash report included photos of the trail the tires made in the grass as the car left the highway. And later, as it was submerged in the creek 30 feet below, only the roof sticking out of the water, the headlights shining down into the depths.
The car was sinking, and he got out the car and went back and got the young lady out the car that he was riding with.
Dash camera video shows several emergency vehicles on the scene.
What's up, man? You know which way they're at?
Right down here.
And crews making their way down the embankment, out of sight, but still communicating over the radio.
Two occupants are being treated right now. They're working on getting them out of the creek. It's been confirmed that there are only two occupants, and they're both accounted for in one vehicle.
A 1998 green Honda Accord.
Here, an ambulance arrives. Herman is put in the back. His passenger, we'll talk about her later. She's important.
And depending on her extent of her injuries.
Okay.
Possibly, yeah, just okay. Based on his mannerisms. Okay. He's all, you saw him down there too, talking to himself.
Amazing they're alive.
Yeah.
Amazing they're alive, someone says. Herman went to the hospital and then to jail that same night. But 27 days later, he would be dead.
The sheriff's investigator was at my door. And I mean, the only thing I could think about when they showed up was what went wrong. I kept asking them, why are you here? And that's when they told me, you know, my son had died in jail. The only information that they had is that he went into a seizure inside his cell during rack up time. By the time they finally got medical to him, he was already dead. They don't know what brought the seizure on or anything. I don't understand why there's a homicide detective at my front door telling me my son died. I mean, my son doesn't have a history of seizures, and he was asking me these questions. Is there a history of seizures in your family? Have you or anybody in your family ever had seizures? Seizures don't run in our family, so no.
Demisha stopped, looked up at the photos on the wall again, and shook her head. In a few of them, a younger Herman was wearing a basketball jersey and holding a football.
He's played sports since he was 11 years old. I've kept him in football and basketball and track. We have to go through full physicals. It just didn't seem right. Just something about it didn't seem right. Then when the Texas Rangers showed up, I really thought it was foul play going on with his death, because I'm like, now Texas Rangers are involved?
When someone dies in a Texas jail, state law says an outside agency has to investigate.
Well, this is Ranger Michael Smith.
In this case, it was the Texas Rangers.
The date is June 21. It's 3:35 p.m. I'm at the Burns residence, and I have the following people in the room with me.
Demisha Burns.
So I'm here to discuss Mr. Titus's demise. And I want to speak to everyone that the sheriff's office is speaking with, and any other people that may have known him or was in contact with him right before this occurred, so I can get a conclusive idea as to what took place. Or any other questions you may have, I'll give you the answer. You may not like my answer, but I'm going to tell you the truth. I have no desire to make the sheriff's office look good or bad. I'm just here to put the truth out.
We got a recording of the investigator's interview with Demisha. At the time, she was waiting for her son's autopsy. Only a few days had passed since he died.
You said you was present for the autopsy.
Yes, ma'am. I'm literally standing right there. I could touch him if I wanted to. That's how close we are. The thing we were looking for initially was a head injury, because that's what will cause you to... And I was told that he did have a small seizure. So I was thinking immediately head injury. He had a head injury.
The arrest report said Titus told officers he'd hit his head during the collision, but that was nearly a month before he died.
I really want to know what the cause of death was, because, like I told the detective, my son was healthy.
Yes. He looked like he's very healthy. I mean, he had just a small amount of fat cells on him, but he was in good shape.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not understanding how he just dropped dead.
So that's what I'm concerned with, and I wanted to find out what toxicology is going to say. That's going to take the longest part. What I was told was that he, and I got to verify this, but I was told that he said he had pain in his head, and he gave a very vivid description. He said he had pain, started here, and ran down the back of his neck. And I want to verify that, and I want to know what nurses were there and what the recommendations were. Because it seemed real, I'm not going to say wrong, but it's odd that normally when these things happen, I get called immediately. You know, the scene is still fresh, I can go and take all my pictures, etc. This occurred, then later that afternoon they call me. One of the concerns that I have is the sign release saying that he didn't want treatment.
Is it his signature?
But see, even with that, even if he signed it, I'm concerned if he understood what he was signing. Because sometimes somebody will push something in front of you and they won't fully explain that.
Right.
And I want to make sure that they did what they were supposed to do. They did the due diligence. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get the medical records, and I'll go through those page by page, line by line, and make sure that what was supposed to have been done was done. I'm also going to look at the video, because I want to see this basketball court incident, what that was about, and how big of an issue that was.
The timeline, the mysterious medical refusal, and a brief mention of something about a basketball court at the jail, where I'd later learn something happened to Herman the day before he died. I had to get that video.
All right, it's 4:22. I'm going to conclude this interview.
I told him that I wanted to get an attorney to follow the investigation along his investigation, to make sure that every stone was being turned over, and to make sure that my child did not die due to neglect inside of that place. I mean, I understand that they're only supposed to provide you the basics, but at the end of the day, a person has to be able to stand trial for whatever wrong they've done. So at the end of the day, you have to keep my kid alive. And he kept telling me, no, don't get an attorney right now. Let me do my investigation and I'm gonna come back and give you a full report. I still went looking for an attorney. I found a guy that was willing to look into it for me out of Seattle, Washington. And once he started looking into it, you know, and pulling records and whatever they had, and after that, you know, the Texas Ranger cut all communication with me at that time.
3 months later, the final autopsy results were in, and the Texas Ranger investigation was wrapped up. He found no wrongdoing, just like the state's Commission on Jail Standards and Travis County. The case was closed, so the county should have released the records at that point, right?
When your lawyer tried to get information in the case, what happened?
He said that they kept giving him the runaround, like, oh, well, I have to wait to get permission from the attorney general to turn this over. Everything he was requesting was all matters of public records.
The sheriff's office told us it was simply complying with the Texas Public Information Act. The spokesperson said whenever there's a question about whether or not it's appropriate to release certain information, they seek a ruling from the Texas Attorney General. And the Attorney General agreed. The county could withhold evidence related to the investigation into Herman's death, except for basic information. A single page with very few details. Not enough for Demetia to pursue a civil rights case. And the deadline for her attorney to file a personal injury claim against the sheriff's office was approaching.
That's when he called me back and told me he couldn't take the case.
How'd you feel when you found out that there was so much difficulty in getting the evidence you needed to take the case further?
I broke. I mean, I completely broke down.
Demetia's attorney dropped the case when Travis County used what's commonly known as the dead suspect loophole. It's actually an exception put in place decades ago, generally to protect privacy. It only involves closed cases, not active investigations, and it gives law enforcement agencies the discretion to withhold information in closed criminal cases that did not result in a conviction or deferred adjudication. For example, if someone is arrested and evidence is gathered, but the charges are eventually dropped, it might be in that person's best interest to keep that evidence out of public view. But lawmakers never meant the law to apply to cases when suspects die in custody. Someone who dies can never be convicted or cleared of a crime. That's the loophole.
So, in a sense, they'll never have to give the information out that they didn't give you and your lawyer.
It hurts. I mean, it hurts a lot. It still hurts, but I just try to keep living because eventually the truth will come out of what happened to my child. All I want right now is the truth. I don't care about no money. I just want closure. It's been a year since my son's been gone, and I haven't even had an opportunity to grieve because I have so many unanswered questions. And I'm just tired of the roadblocks, to be honest.
So was I. We'd hit the same roadblock with the sheriff's office. But this agency was just one of many in Texas using this loophole.
We've been doing a lot of research on this topic and finding that police across Texas use this law a lot to their benefit so they don't have to release information about cases that are never going to go to court. So there's a lot of families out there like yours, lawyers, journalists that want answers in those cases. What do you think?
If you're not wrong and you did everything by the book, then you have nothing to worry about. So why withhold the information?
Over the next several months after meeting Demetia, what we discovered would prompt state leaders to consider changing the law that kept this mother in the dark for so long. And with our help, she would soon learn what really happened to her son in his final days.
Almost just gave up. I was hoping for a star to just fall in my lap. And then next thing I know, you called. So maybe amongst this investigation, it'll give me some answers. Maybe it'll give me a little bit of closure.
Next time.
How does a DWI case work?
You're actually being charged with intox assault.
Intox assault?
Yeah.
What is that?
It's when somebody gets injured by driving while intoxicated. Kid.
So he changed it. Because he told me he was giving me a DWI.
Right.
I'm not coming home. Ain't gonna be no coming home for that.
We've created an immersive video feature to walk you through the evidence in this case, and a digital project to further explore police transparency problems across Texas online to accompany this podcast season. Just go to deadincustody.com. Catalyst is reported, produced, and edited by me, Josh Hinkle, along with David Barrere. Digital support for this episode comes from Andrew Choate, Stephanie Dockery, Arzo Dost, Rachel Garza, Matt Mitchell, Sarah Rafik, Christine Sanchez, Martin Sanchez, Robert Sims, Kate Winkle, and Corbin Wright. KXAN's news director is Chad Cross, and its vice president and general manager is Eric Glassberg.